seat, and the doctor will see you shortly.
Right, okay, sir. I'm just going to get you to step on the scales for a second.
Have you considered losing some weight out with your joint pain?
Achaz maspik, en bishvilech yoter.
You can't be fat and happy.
It's a tea that you drink, and it melts all your belly fat.
All right, class. Who can tell me what a healthy snack looks like?
Before we start you on treatment, we're going to need you to lose some weight.
You'll never have a baby unless you lose weight.
Itne alu khaogi to alu ban jaogi.
Thank you for waiting. The fat doctor will see you now.
Welcome to episode 13. Today I'm going to be speaking to a good friend of mine, Jeanette. She's known as the Mindset Nutritionist on Instagram. And she and I try to be as professional as possible throughout this podcast. I can't promise you that we managed it for the whole entire time. I owe a lot to Jeanette. She has taught me so much and I'm so grateful for her friendship. So of course, she had to be part of the first series of this podcast. There was no way I was going to let her get away with not being on. I'm continuing to have some issues with my recording software. It's not great, I'm not going to lie. I've tried to clean up the audio as much as possible. And as soon as I'm able, I'm going to buy myself a new mic. So without further ado, let's catch up with Jeanette and you can see just how immature we can be from time to time.
This isn't going to work. Do you know what? I can tell you from the beginning, this is not going to work. We are not going to take this seriously at all.
I'm going to shimmy my way through it.
Yeah, the thing is, I want everyone to know as we begin this podcast that I had to convince Jeanette that she couldn't do it from her bed because she looked too much like a cam girl. And she really was reveling in it. And I really had to say to her, look, can you just come a little bit closer and sit down on a chair and stop shimmying? I mean, as much as I enjoy your heaving bosom, now is not the time. I need a degree of professionalism, please.
It's always the time for that. I can't control these anymore.
They are, I mean, they are spectacular right now.
Thank you. I know.
Spectacular. We can talk about that if you want to, why they are that spectacular.
It's because I've breastfed 2 children and I'm pregnant.
And they're like, hello. So for those who haven't heard me talk about Jeanette, you haven't been paying attention because I talk about her all the time. A little bit of background, how we met, and then I'll tell the story and then you can join in and tell the story as well. So everyone hears the story from both. So I was really, so actually, yes, let's tell the whole story. I was really into this group called Rebel Fit. I'm putting it out there. It's my podcast. I can say what I want. And yeah. I was introduced to Rebel Fit by somebody who I knew, like a mutual friend who was part of Rebel Fit. And on the outside, it was sort of making sense, right? Because there was a lot of things that I was connecting to. I was very new to the kind of anti-diet movement, and I had been neck deep in diet culture for, you know, the vast majority of my life, and I was just coming out of it. And part of Rebel Fit, and I was posting a few things. How did you find me, by the way? How did Jeanette meet me on Insta?
You started tagging me.
Oh.
Started tagging me in posts. I was like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah.
I liked where you were going with things and I could see where your thought process was going.
Yeah.
And I feel as if kind of I commented a few times. I was like, I'm going to, because I quite like this person, I'm going to give her a gentle nudge.
Hmm.
Not tell her what to do, but point her in a direction. So that's kind of where I came in, wasn't it?
You did. And it was great because you kind of questioned. And I wasn't very nice to you, but you persisted. Nevertheless, she persisted because that's the kind of person that Jeanette is. And as you can tell, a lot has happened since then. And my life would not be the same without her in it. So I'm very glad she persisted. But the Rebel Fit situation was a really interesting one, actually, because on the outset, it looked fine. Right?
It does, doesn't it?
Set point weight was mentioned, you know, diets don't work, calorie control, it's, you know, that's not what it's about, all food is good for you. It had its merits, and I paid quite a bit of money to get into one of the programmes. I've only had mentioned it like 2 weeks prior to that. Like, I think perhaps
you would have saved some money.
I never got it back either. I was promised a refund, but I never got it.
I remember that. Did you never get that money back again?
No. I suppose it's an interesting concept because you are Well, you tell us who you are and what you do. Like, let me not put words in your mouth. Tell us who you are and what you do.
I was interested about what you were going to describe me like, though.
I am going to afterwards. You go first, and then I'll go afterwards.
I am a mid-fat non-diet nutritionist. I help people with intuitive eating. I help people with internalized anti-fat bias, and the majority of people that I now help are fat themselves, and I have a lot of passion about it. I basically live and breathe it, and I just enjoy everything that I do, don't I? And you can't stop me, which is the problem with me.
But in a really lovely way. I mean, you're almost evangelical about it, but in that really like you don't push it on anyone. You respect people's boundaries, and even with me, like you said, you gave me a gentle nudge, but you never had a go at me. You never argued with me. You just kind of went, well, have you thought about, or you know, have you considered? Which is a really lovely way of going about it. You believe in intuitive eating, right? I mean, I can put that out there.
Yeah,
you are where I learnt all of this stuff from. I mean, you introduced me to intuitive eating. I did a course with you where I learned about intuitive eating, met lots of other really lovely people, did like, you know, a course week by week and learned a lot about it. So everything I know about intuitive eating, I learned from you, and then I went on and read from other people, but you definitely introduced me to it. And I think there are a lot of people that are listening to this probably that have heard of it. Some people might not have, you know, fingers crossed that there are people that haven't, because that's the whole point of this podcast. I want to reach the people that aren't part of this community and aren't like, definitely, you know, 4 years into their intuitive eating journey, because they already know, and that's great. But tell us about intuitive eating. What is it? What does it mean?
So intuitive eating really basically is normative. It's normal eating. It's that kind of eating that we do when we're like toddlers, if we're allowed to, because there are some people who are even in diets really at that stage. It's a very healing and quite a therapeutic journey to go on in relation to your food, and also brings in your body and sustainable healthy behaviors. We step away from the thoughts of weight loss, although a lot of people start their journeys in that place, start that journey going, I feel like I still need to lose weight. That's so common. But by the kind of like the first kind of month, all of that's been challenged, and it's very weight neutral. So it's not something where you will lose weight, maintain weight, or put on weight. It could be any one of those, but none of them are any better than the other. It's all about focusing on those healthy behaviors that we can develop. And rather than punishing ourselves into healthy behaviors, we're actually looking after ourselves into them instead. We're caring about our body. So it's just a much nicer way of caring for ourselves, and a much nicer way of nourishing ourselves. And it really does change your whole really outlook on things, I think.
So a lot of people think, oh, you know, intuitive eating, you can eat whatever you want. I mean, that's how we got into this trouble in the first place. Two things I'd like to say about that. First of all, we're not in trouble. And you and I both know, because we spend a lot of time texting each other about the fact that this person said this, and that's really annoying because it's not true. Jeanette is the person that I will often go to when I'm like, I need a study for this. Can you get me a study for this, please? Do you know any studies for this? And she'll go, I'm on it. And then she comes back to me like a day later. Here are all the studies I've found. Or sometimes I'll write to her and go, this looks like a crap study, but I don't have time to look at it. Can you look at it? She'll come back to me. She'll go, well, there's a problem here and there and everywhere. So you love your critical appraisal, right? You do like to,
oh, I
love to read research and to sort of look at it sort of from a very, kind of critical eye, so that, you know, a lot of the evidence that we find is very biased, and we have to be able to spot that bias, and we have to be able to say, actually, what is this paper telling me? Quite often the conclusion to the paper has absolutely no bearing on what the paper actually showed. The results and the conclusions, like you're reading two separate papers, pretty much, right? And it's, when it comes to the bias, I mean, there was one paper I was reading recently that just flat out said, you know, assuming the correlation to be causation. Do you remember that one? Can't remember the exact words.
Oh, it's horrible.
Just flat out, aren't just saying it, like brazenly saying, we'll just assume that the correlation that we found is actually causation.
I don't understand how they get away with that kind of level of bias. I've seen some really, really good posts online actually calling those kind of things out and saying that people who go into research should probably be learning about the social justice side of things. So actually they can bring that knowledge into that work. It just feels so wrong that assumptions, such huge assumptions, are being made within science. That I know that with nutrition and with health, we have a lot of grey areas. It's not an easy thing to be researching, but it could be much better. We're doing the bare minimum currently.
And I think this is it. I think a lot of people just kind of go, well, there's a wealth of evidence. And you're just like, well, there's a lot of evidence, but very little of it is actually good evidence. So once you get rid of 95% of the stuff that actually is completely and utterly nonsensical, or, you know, you didn't adjust for anything that you needed to adjust for. You haven't taken anything into consideration. You've just, you know, you've failed in the basic principles of research. Once you get rid of all of that, you see that actually the research, the evidence isn't there. The evidence that we're all in trouble, and, you know, this idea of what's how we all got into trouble in the first place, doesn't exist. There is no evidence to show that being fat is really as bad for you as people keep making out. So that's one of the first things you taught me. But then beyond that, the idea that if you go into intuitive eating and you can eat whatever you want, you're just going to get into more quote unquote trouble. That's wrong, but can you tell us why?
Yeah, it's wrong. I mean, if we just put some common sense to this, actually, I've got a great analogy. Like, say, for example, you go on holiday, it's an all-inclusive holiday, or you're eating out in restaurants every single day, you're not cooking a meal for yourself. Then you come back home again. What is the first thing that you fancy? You fancy like a home-cooked meal, something that you just have that's like a family staple, and you cook that and you just really, really crave and want that. And that's really similar to like intuitive eating and how our bodies and our minds work if we allow it to. If you eat burgers after burgers after burgers, or even salad after salad after salad, you're going to get bored. You're going to get fed up. You're not going to feel great, let's be honest, either one of them, because you're still missing out on a different experience with your food. You're not varying the nutrients and the nutrient density on a daily basis with either one of those meals. So you're not just going to carry on eating those things. Your body and your mind come to this place where you actually end up eating in probably the kind of best way that you've eaten, the best way you've nourished yourself. You actually allow yourself to eat, you know, a variety of food rather than a diet when we just have like the same meals every single day. We get really bored with it. We end up with our binge eating and overeating and then hyper focusing on like emotional eating and stuff as well. A lot of people really get concerned that with intuitive eating, you're just going to put on weight, 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 and carry on with that. So we're trying to take weight out of this because we know that weight and health doesn't go together. We're trying to separate that. So actually, if your body does end up putting on weight, your body's doing what it needs to do. But logically, are you going to carry on putting on weight forever? No, because your body has that set point weight and your body wants to settle within that set point weight. Your weight, it needs to go wherever it's going for recovery. You know that you're recovering from disordered eating. No one's going to carry on putting on weight for the rest of their lives on intuitive eating. You will settle into the weight that your body is supposed to be and is happy being, and it's not a struggle being there. And also, you don't just carry on eating forever because it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't work like that.
And it's interesting because I love the analogy of the all-inclusive holiday or any holiday, really. We work and we work and we work and we work and we work. And then we have that 2 weeks out of every year when we go on holiday, if we're lucky, or go somewhere or take a break. And we just, all the rules get thrown out the window. And it's often that I come back from those situations like, oh, I really overindulged. And I can feel it in my waistline. My trousers feel a bit tighter than they used to. And I used to think that was a really bad thing. Now what I realise is that this was your body's way of relaxing. It needed to rest. Your body was saying, feed me all the foods that you've been denying me for the last 50 weeks. I need all of that stuff that is pleasurable, that gives me pleasure. I want to be able to relax and enjoy myself. That's actually really good for your body. Your body, your mind, your whole body, you know, mind, body and soul, needs that stuff. It needs to relax and let loose. But like you said, you couldn't do an all-inclusive holiday 52 weeks out of the year. you would feel violently ill after, you know, even 2 weeks feels like a bit of a push. You come back thinking, I need to detox. I need to eat sort of plain, bland food. And I can't think of another cocktail. You know, I don't want cocktails now for the next year because you've had too much. And too much is just, you know, it's fine for a time. This idea of overindulging and then feeling it in your waistline, as you say, you will settle back and weight fluctuates. And we have to remember that. But when there's no rules ever, I think your body does exactly the opposite. Like you don't have to constantly think, oh, it's my 2 weeks out of the year where I can chill out and eat whatever I want, because you can eat that whenever you want to. So you may go on holiday and go, oh, that all looks delicious, I'm going to eat all of that. But you also don't have to, because you know that you can go home and eat it when you get home. But there's way more to it, right? Like, it's not just eat what you like. You taught me quite early on about the science of it, and I find it interesting. So you talked about the hunger hormones, and I would love it if you sort of did like a little kind of short, brief explanation for people about how the body works, because there's a lot of confusion here.
So much confusion. So diets tend to completely basically say to us that it's all willpower, it's all determination, whereas actually it's not us failing the diet whatsoever. The diet has literally forgotten on purpose so many important biological processes that go on within our body. And these biological processes aren't things that we can trick ourselves out of or into. We can't change them. They are there because we need them for actual survival. Our hunger and our hunger hormones are exactly the same. Like, it is a healthy thing to produce hormones. We should be doing that. So with our hunger, we have a number of hunger hormones. I won't go into all of them right now, because otherwise we will be here for the next hour. But we have these hunger hormones that tell us when we need to eat. So when we're talking about this willpower and determination, what we're trying to do is we're trying to ignore these hunger hormones that are rising up after our last meal, that are slowly starting to tell us in a very gentle way and give us these internal cues of going, okay, we're starting to feel hungry now. A lot of people think that hunger is when we get to the stage of being like, oh my God, I'm so hungry, I'm hangry, I'm angry, I'm irritable, I need to have something right now, and you'll be snappy at people. And actually, that's a really, you know, our hunger hormones at that stage are super duper high. They're screaming at us at that stage, and that has a huge knock-on effect in our body anyway. Where actually, if we kind of rewound and actually went, okay, that very first thought we have about that food that's in the cupboard. Other people, it's like a gentle rumble in your stomach. Other people, they might notice that their energy starts dipping. But that's the thing. We think that hunger, because of diets, is this massive, huge thing we get to, and we need to ignore it as much as possible. But actually, ignoring it as well has a knock-on effect, because everything has a knock-on effect in our body, because you're ignoring these screaming hunger hormone levels that are really, really high. You're trying to satisfy yourself with like a tiny rice cake, as if that's going to be the thing that fills you up. Then you go and have lunch, and lunch is like small and dainty, and it's like a piece of bread, and it's the only piece of bread that you'll have for the day. You might have an apple, and then you might have a Miller Lite next to it, and everything's measured or weighed. And by the end of the day, you are quite literally starving. Your body is going, what the hell are you doing? Why are you ignoring me? I need to have some food, which has the knock-on effect of causing binge eating or overeating. And that's when people start getting stuck in the cycle, because what people don't realize is if you've had a day like that, that affects your other days after that. When we don't reset after 24 hours, our body doesn't work like that. We wake up and our body kind of ebbs and flows with what, so it knows what happened yesterday. So you're going to be waking up still feeling ravenous, because even though you had a binge or you overate, it's still thinking, but we still didn't get enough. And we're also worried that you're not trusting me. So my hunger hormones are still really, really high. And I'm still going to make you really, really hungry. This is where the feeling of food addiction can come from, because you're constantly thinking about food. And that is down to all of your hunger hormones. We have hormones, but we also have neurotransmitters. And those neurotransmitters, have an impact of making you crave carbohydrates, which is really interesting. These people who are saying we can live without carbs. No, our body wants carbs, and it's literally through mechanisms telling us that we need carbohydrates. And knowing that helps us on so much of our journeys, because then we start realizing that it was never the diet. Your willpower isn't an issue. It's just that we're trying to trick our body out of like a biological process, and we can't do that.
And it's interesting you mention that. I think one of the things I've learned from intuitive eating is that I've got to know my body a lot better. There are other things that I have learned about my body that I really didn't know. So I have been menstruating since I was 12 years old. I'm now 41. And I've never had a particularly regular menstrual cycle. And then, you know, contraception and babies and all sorts of things happened. Breastfeeding happened. And, you know, I've never really felt like a clockwork person. Some people are just like, today is my period. And then they get it. I'm the opposite. In the last few months, I know exactly when my period is coming, because for about 2 to 3 days before that, I am ravenous. I cannot control my hunger. I'm so hungry. My body is just constantly craving food. And it used to frighten me. It used to really frighten me. It doesn't frighten me anymore. I'm literally like, oh, get the menstrual cup ready, warn my husband, it's on its way. You know, and it's so irregular. It could come at any point in time, but I know now, and I'm spot on every single time. I can tell you even the hour. I'm like, I'm getting my period today. And it comes. I have never been in tune with my body before. This is amazing to me. And the same is also with my mental health. I can tell so much about my mental health from what is happening with my hunger. If I'm thinking about food, also if I'm finding it hard to make decisions about food, if I'm just like eating things without thinking, because I don't have the headspace to be a little bit more kind of, you know, sitting down and asking my body, like, what do you actually want? Like, do you want pasta? Do you want, like, you know, I'm just a bit all over the place and chaotic, and my eating habits become a bit chaotic. It's a really good warning signal, to just kind of like an alert to say, you need to sit down, you're overstressed, you're overworked, you're, you know, you're getting anxious, you need to rein it in and spend a bit of time. So intuitive eating has had a hugely powerful impact on me that went way beyond the diet. So I could ditch the diet pretty quickly. I got into that really quickly because I was ready. Like, you know, psychologically, I was ready because I'd read the research and I knew that diets didn't work. I knew why they didn't work. I knew that we didn't need to diet. And in fact, dieting is probably one of the worst things you can possibly do to your body in terms of your health. Increases your stress levels, which is terrible. Like you said, you're constantly hungry, and that can make you really anxious and stressed. You have high levels of cortisol all the time. High levels of cortisol. Cortisol is a steroid. You do not want cortisol in your blood. And if you're walking around constantly with a steroid in your blood, that is going to damage your health, reduce your immunity. It's not good for you. It's bad for your mental health. But also, we know that actually, like you said, it leads to disordered eating. It leads to binge eating. It leads to these feelings of food addiction. You're not actually physically addicted to food. Rather, like, you know, there are lots of things out there that you're not necessarily physically addicted. Nicotine is addictive, but food is not addictive. It's not the same thing. But psychologically, you can feel like you're addicted to food, that food controls your life. And that's because you're dieting. It's because you stopped yourself in the first place. If you let yourself eat whatever you want, you'd be fine. All of those things, you know, make dieting so bad. So psychologically, I was ready. I ditched the diet. But then I started to learn about myself, and that's something that I feel, you know, like it's a massively empowering feeling for me. And I gained weight. I had been on a massive diet, and I'd been on a very calorie controlled diet, lost quite a bit of weight, and then went into intuitive eating not long after that. So I gained weight, and I was expecting to gain weight because I knew that I had lost weight because I'd restricted. And it took me a little while to get comfortable with it because, you know, at the end of the day, there was that residual 35-year-old voice in my brain kind of going, you know, since I was yay high and before primary school, you know, I could hear that voice saying, you can't eat that, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. Sounded remarkably like my mother, that voice. So we'll leave that to one side. But now I've come to terms with even my body. And that's another thing you taught me. So, you told me to paint my stretch marks. It was a really beautiful thing because you were talking about embracing your body and body acceptance. And I think that's part of intuitive eating, right? I think people struggle with it, but you said some really amazing things. So now if you could just remember what they all were and just now share them with my podcast listeners, that'd be great.
Well, I don't don't think you can do an intuitive eating journey without bringing in body acceptance, can you? I think we kid ourselves so often that we do diets because of our health, don't we? But actually, we've got so many society pressures that are not only making our health a moral responsibility, which is wrong anyway, because no one can guarantee health. No diet can guarantee that you are going to be healthy. But not only that, we have like society saying to us, you must be thin. If you are a fat person, you've got to be thin. If you are thin, you've probably got to be thinner. Because that's just the mentality, isn't it? It's just that thin ideal is everywhere. Literally, you look on social media, you see the pictures there. I mean, what does the algorithm push? Like, the algorithm only pushes basically white, straight-sized people, which is horrendous in more ways than just one, as we know. And we need to be considering that actually we do things because of our appearance more than we do things because of our health. And people get hung up on that because we're constantly thinking about what other people think about our body. We're constantly worried about everyone else looking at us and judging us and that kind of thing. Our worth kind of comes from other people and where their confidence comes from. So when we lose weight, people are saying to us, oh, you look so great. Oh, you look so amazing. You lost so much weight. And oh my God, you've never looked better. And you're sat there kind of like thinking, so this whole time I was the weight beforehand, were you judging me for that? So it's never a good thing anyway, but you feel like you're getting like worthiness from someone else. And actually, when we start going onto this intuitive eating and body acceptance journey, you're trying to change that. You're trying to get your worth from yourself instead. So then you're not dependent on other people giving you compliments and telling you that you look nice, because actually, we're not here to be ornaments. We're not here to be comfortable viewing. And that comfortable viewing comes from like a male gaze. We, as women especially, have been taught from such a young age that we just need to be pretty. We just need to be small, quiet, get on with stuff, you know, look as nice as possible, be as comfortable for people to look at. And that's what we take on. And actually, that's quite gross when you think about it. We don't realise that we're doing it. We're trying to make other people comfortable for looking at us. But actually, we are all so much more. And as soon as we start considering that and start owning that, really, and going, okay, I'm not just an ornament. This is the thing, especially at the beginning of a journey, we're not aiming for like self-love. There is so much conversation about like body positivity, but not actually in the way that body positivity should be spoken about. Like, body positivity has been so co-opted by diet culture. Body positivity is more about marginalized and oppressed bodies, that we should be raising those voices up, especially people who are much more marginalized and oppressed than you are. But self-love is something I talk about. There are a lot of people on Instagram preaching self-love, and it's so difficult to imagine being able to stand there in front of like a camera and pose, be like, I love myself so much, when actually diets make us hate ourselves. So actually, well, we need to be getting to this place of this neutrality and acceptance. I'm going to try and be kind to myself. I'm going to try and develop a kind, compassionate voice to myself, because actually I don't need to conform to beauty standards. I can reject those, or I can take on the ones that I quite like. You know, it's very flexible, but actually knowing that you can have gratitude and respect for your body no matter what it looks like. And I think that's really powerful when you start thinking about those things, but it's a lot of unpicking to do, isn't it?
Definitely. I probably think it's a lifelong journey. You know, I think, I've talked about this with people who have been doing it for years and years and years, and you know, they're going through, they have their great moments, and then they have their moments where they kind of fall off the grid for a bit because they're really struggling because something happens that triggers them, or that's very normal. I think your body says so much about you. Unfortunately, it does. It's the first thing people see. We have to recognize that your body says so much about you. The larger you are, the more you're going to get judged. There's no question about this. So I can probably get away in many circles. If I'm walking down the street, nobody hurls abuse at me. There will always be some knobhead in a van, you know, shouts out some stupid, obnoxious, you know, slur at me. But aside from those moments, people don't stop and stare. I have never been approached in a supermarket and had the contents of my trolley judged. If I were 100 pounds heavier, I would. And people who were in larger bodies than me, 100 pounds heavier than me, 200 pounds heavier than me, have told me repeatedly, this has been my experience. People have stopped me in the street. People have, you know, waved their hands at me and like flagged me down to tell me about myself and how I need to lose weight and how. So I think, you know, definitely there's no question that your body says something about you. And I think when it comes to fat, what people are assuming is that you lack discipline, that you're greedy, that you don't care about yourself, you have no self-respect. You are less valuable to society. You have less to contribute. But the other thing that we have to remember is that the size of our body isn't the only thing that people see. So people also see the colour of our skin. So if you're in a large body, they're already making judgments about you based on that. But then they see the colour of your skin. Maybe they see it first. Maybe they see it second. Doesn't really matter because they're making other judgments about you based on that. The way you express your gender, you know, if you're not gender conforming, if you're not cisgender, again, people are making other judgments about that. If you're disabled, I mean, how many times have people told me that they're disabled and living in a larger body? Perhaps they're on a mobility scooter or they're in a wheelchair, whatever. And people are absolutely appalling because the assumption is you know you're fat because you're lazy and your fatness and your laziness landed you in that wheelchair, as opposed to you have a condition that has caused you to be in a wheelchair. Because if you're thin and in a wheelchair, people have a different reaction to you. It's probably still not a good reaction. Most people are prejudiced towards disabled people. But it's worse if you're in a bigger body. So we talk about that intersection. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that to people who are listening right now. If you're feeling judged, chances are you probably have been judged. and as you said, Jeanette, if people are telling you, oh, no one judges you, nobody cares, they do. And employers judge you, teachers judge you. Judges judge you, police officers judge you, social workers judge you. Everybody is judging other people's based on their appearance, what that says about them. But then again, a lot of people are just too busy but judging themselves to judge you in that moment. And then I guess, you know, as you say, we have to make a decision about whether we're willing to spend the rest of our lives trying not to be judged, trying to make our bodies fit in with a standard set by a group of people who are, let's face it, in the minority. You know, to be straight size, cisgender, you know, white and thin, you're actually in the minority, my friend. But they control everything. They control media, they control politics, they control healthcare, they control education. And because they control it, they get to dictate it. They are the CEOs of the companies that dictate everything that's going on around us, all that subliminal messaging, all that marketing. So they set the standard and we have to decide for ourselves, am I going to spend the rest of my life trying to fit that standard? Or am I just going to say, sod it, I get however many revolutions around the sun before I'm going to die. Everyone's going to die, by the way. I hate to break it to you, but as a doctor, I can guarantee you one thing. You will not live forever. So if you've only got a certain amount of revolutions around the sun, are you going to spend it just trying to conform so that people will judge you less? I totally understand the desire to do it. I spent all of my life up until now doing that. And then I realised, nah, I'm not going to do that anymore. And it was a eureka light bulb moment. I'm done. It's a waste of my time and my energy and my resources. They're finite. I don't have that many resources to give. And that's it. I'm done. But I, again, acknowledge that it's easier to say when I am in the body that I'm in. And if I was 100 pounds heavier, I would struggle much more to say that. And if I happen to have brown skin, I would struggle much more to say that. I get it. So there's no judgment if you're struggling with body neutrality. As you said, a lot to unpick. If you feel like you've got to that stage where you're fed up, but you don't know what to do about it. And a lot of people will say to me, yeah, and I really want to ditch the diet, but I can't get my operation until I drop my BMI below 30, or I'm desperate to have a child. There is no quick fix, no simple solution. On Instagram, I follow a lot of intuitive eating accounts and, you know, we're a little community, aren't we? We all get to know each other and learn about each other and stuff. But you did this amazing post, which I still love. And you sent me the picture before you posted it, which I just adored, where you basically were copying another nutritionist who was basically kind of saying, just eat the bagel or just eat the bread or whatever, but was posing for the camera in that very Fitzbo kind of way, you know, that sort of long-legged, the right angle, smiling, just happens to be holding bread instead of a kale smoothie. And obviously these nutritionists are often very successful. They have thousands and thousands of followers. They get a lot of, what's it when you get money from Instagram? What's that called? When you like paid partnerships. Yeah, they get a lot of paid partnerships. They're doing well. They're successful.
They're very, very successful. Very, very well known, aren't they?
Yeah. How does it feel to be in the field that you're in a larger body? Like, what kind of obstacles do you face?
I've had very kind of mixed feelings, very emotional feelings. Most of the time, I feel as if it is so important that people in fat bodies doing what I do, so being a nutritionist or being a dietitian, exist. We have a huge amount of people who are fat, who know that they don't want to diet because it's a miserable experience. I completely understand why people do diet and have diet and want to lose weight. I have so much empathy and sympathy for those people, and I totally get it and totally understand it. But wanting to give up diets but also wanting to lose weight at the same time, it kind of feels at odds, and it feels like this really confusing, overwhelming place to be. And then when you look in places like Instagram, and the main names that you have are all straight-sized people who are saying to you, oh, it's okay, you can be fat, and it's okay to be fat, when actually there isn't that understanding there of what it actually means. I mean, I even say this from a privileged body myself, because as I said, I'm a mid-fat, white, straight woman. I come with a hell of a lot of privilege, a huge amount of privilege, but I can still have an understanding and have a knowledge of how people are feeling in this kind of body here, and go, okay, I get it. I get it, and I know where you are, and I know that body acceptance feels way out of reach. I know that body neutrality feels way out of reach, and I know that actually we should be talking about something different. We should be talking about fat acceptance. We should be talking about fat liberation instead of just focusing on acceptance of the body. And I know how long that takes and how difficult that is in a society that literally pushes out fat people and literally wants to make fat people not exist. We have amazing thin allies like in this space, and they do amazing work to raise up voices. But I do feel like not enough is being done in relation to that. And I do feel like sometimes bodies can be used as very similar with like diets, like eat like me and you'll look like me. And I feel like we can fall into that very slightly with intuitive eating as well, with some of these people that are in that space. So for me, I have that kind of mixed emotion. And for me, it did come with a whole load of sadness. I did some crying voice notes to you, didn't I? It's just this kind of knowledge that I do experience in the body that I am now, no matter how much privilege I have with this body, I do experience marginalization in my actual business, because I actively don't take a posed photo, because I know that people need to know that you don't have to curate. And like that photo that I took, like I wanted to do those kinds of things, but because my legs have cellulite and they're big, and I say that not in a negative way, I know they're big and I love my big thighs, like, but because that doesn't meet the ideal, it's uncomfortable viewing for everyone to see a body like mine. And that's a body like mine as it is, like trying to do business and try to get to actually work within a nutrition industry in a body like mine and larger just feels very difficult, and it comes with a lot of emotion. And it took a lot for me to start actually doing what I'm doing, because I had always had this hang up of, well, I shouldn't be doing it in my body. I'm not the stereotypical shape and size of a nutritionist. So why would someone want to listen to me? And that was a lot to really kind of work through my own kind of personal journey, my own internalized fat phobia and anti-fat bias. I wouldn't do anything differently. People need this kind of thing.
I think when you're in a marginalized body, whatever that body might be, and I don't want to speak on behalf of everybody that's ever been marginalized, because that would be an atrocious thing to do. But my feeling from listening to people, whether it be because they're in a larger body or because they're, because they're black or, you know, brown or disabled, it seems to me, especially if you're trying to be successful, because, you know, at the end of the day, creators and, you know, business people, we need to earn a living, because many of us are small business owners. I think sometimes you have to make that choice between integrity and, I don't want to say selling out, but, you know, selling out and doing well. And that's it's a really fine line to walk. And, you know, I see a few, I see those who've made it, the ones that that maintain their integrity and were successful. And I'm just like, yes, you are amazing. But I look around and I don't see many nutritionists on Instagram who talk about intuitive eating and body positivity that are in a body like mine. I don't know many personal trainers. Amy and I were talking about this the other week, you know, some fantastic intuitive eating, you know, non-diet, body neutral PTs out there. Most of them look like they belong in a gym, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not criticizing them. They're doing an amazing job and I'm grateful for them. But I would love to see more personal trainers that look like me. And, you know, Becky, she's totally coming on season two. She doesn't know this yet. It's her birthday today as we record. But Becky, who is Misfits at Misfits Workouts, so she's fantastic. But of course it impacts her business. Of course she'll never be as successful as somebody in a smaller body. And I've had conversations with, again, I'm hoping to have these people on the show, with black nutritionists who have said, it's really hard being a black nutritionist because the field of nutrition is inherently very racist. Again, you know, those that have made it, I just think, gosh, that took a lot of grit and determination to get where you are. I'm quite lucky in that this is not my primary source of income. I have another job that I do, and you know, I am the fat doctor. Primarily, I'm a doctor who's fat, who also happens to be on Instagram. But it must be really hard when you're trying to, you know, I know it's really hard for you when you're trying to have this business as a nutritionist, and it's what you're passionate about, it's what you want to do. But you have to either choose between just having a headshot so nobody sees your body and then maybe might think, oh, yes, I'll go and see her, versus showing your beautiful body and your thighs and your curves and then accepting that actually you're never getting to the top of those algorithms. And if we're not at the top of those algorithms, how do you grow your business? That's how most people do it now. Social media is essential. So if you can't get to the top of those algorithms, how do you grow your business? We live in a really messed up society, and there is just so much that we still need to do. But something you said earlier reminded me about our little group of intuitive eaters, and I think it's nice that we're coming back to them now. Without giving away any details, there was one particular individual who, when I first met, I wasn't sure how they were ever going to get to a place of intuitive eating, because it just felt like it couldn't happen. And at some point in time during those sessions, something clicked. And they became involved in fat activism, body liberation, you know, whatever you want to call it. And all of a sudden, boom, they were so enthusiastic. And it was like things changed overnight. And I think this is what saved me, is suddenly I realized how crap the world was and how much I'd been lied to. And I was so angry. I was determined to prove the world wrong. And when I see people and I think they're judging me now, like, I'm sticking two fingers up at them in my mind, because I'm like, go on, judge me, I dare you. You have no idea what you're talking about in this late stage capitalistic society that puts profit over people and has these impossible beauty standards to meet. I dare you to judge me. Go ahead, because I'm angry. And anger's fueling me in a big way. This is the wrong way around to do it, but just can you end it by telling us your journey and your story?
I had always loved food. I've always been a foodie. I wanted to be a chef. And I remember doing work experience and then realising that I'm actually very much a people person. I quite like being front of house rather than back of house. And then I was kind of like, well, I kind of like science. And I started looking into it. I was like, oh my God, I really want to become a dietitian. That would be amazing. I would love like to help people do that kind of thing. It would be so good. So I applied. did my A-levels, discovered boys during my A-levels, so didn't get the grades to become a dietitian. Massive mistake, but one I'm thankful for now. So I applied to do a degree in nutrition. And around that same time, I became really, really hyper aware of my body. And I thought to myself, I can't go into a nutrition degree looking like this. I need to do something about it. And so I did on purpose start just not eating. And it got to a stage that I actually kind of fainted a bit in House of Fraser. And I remember my sister being like, what are you doing to yourself? You need to eat something. Just eat something, please. And it was a big shock to me. I remember thinking, probably should be looking after myself a little bit better. I should actually start eating, and felt very out of control. But even from then, I remember going into nutrition and going into my lectures, and I remember people saying to me, oh, Jeanette, when you're ready, you'll want to do something about your weight. When you're ready, you'll get there, it'll be fine, you're doing the nutrition degree, you'll learn it. So it's always been something that I was just like, okay, I'm here learning the nutrition science, I'm here enjoying, reveling in it, but constantly thinking, but I'm not good enough to be doing this. When I look back at any of the pictures around the time that I hadn't been eating, even then, I'm just literally genetically never going to be a straight size person because of my genetics, just how I am. And I came out and I did really well with my nutrition degree, loved it. And I had two ways I could go. I could either go and become a dietitian. I filled out all the forms. I had all the applications ready to go. And I also had my teaching applications ready to go. So I discovered after working in hospitals that I really love like the education side of things and helping people understand nutrition and stuff. So I thought, oh, I could become a food teacher or I could become a dietitian. And dietitian was always the dream. I was scared to do dietetics, and I think a lot of it was because of my body again. I thought to myself, why would anyone listen to me when I look like this? I'm not going to be able to help someone because they're just going to look at me and think, well, why you look like that? So why are you trying to give me any advice? So I went and became a teacher. The whole of my degree was very much, you must lose weight. You need to help people lose weight. Calories, 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 alongside all of the other science and stuff. Nearly 7 years ago was my last diet with Slimming World. I've tried Slim Fast, Slimming World, calorie counting and Slimming World at the same time just to punish myself further. And I just got tired. I got so tired of it because I was just yo-yoing. It never worked. I went to Slimming World. I lost 4 stone. Surprise, surprise, I didn't keep that off. It went on straight away. And it was horrible putting that weight back on. It was a horrible experience because everyone had complimented me so much. Everyone was so proud of me for losing that weight and telling me how amazing I look, how fantastic I looked. For the first time, I had full body photos of myself. And so someone saying hell for every size after I kind of put all the weight back on again, when I was feeling so frustrated and thinking to myself, well, I'm going to try the next diet, haven't I? And I looked into it and I just remember this light bulb going off in my head being like, I knew this, but I didn't know there was science behind this. And I remember falling into intuitive eating. I did it on my own and I fell pregnant with my first daughter. And I remember the midwife telling me that they had a weight restriction to go to the birthing centre. So I'd not dieted for a while, a couple of years before then. And then the midwife said to me, you're on the cusp of not being able to go to the birthing centre because of your BMI. That panicked me. I was like, oh my God, I'm on the cusp. I need to do something about it. I put myself onto literally a crash diet of Slimming World. I ate bare minimum. Knowing that, it was a really bad idea. Knowing that, I wasn't giving my pregnant body enough nutrients, enough calories, but being completely hung up on this policy with the NHS. And I remember being weighed at the birthing centre and she was like, well done. Oh, you've done amazingly. You're exactly the same weight as what you were when you had your booking in appointment when you were 8 weeks pregnant. And bear in mind, this was when I must have been 36 weeks pregnant. And then I went to my midwife after that and she measured me and she said, your baby hasn't grown as much as what we would expect your baby to grow. So can you go and get some scans? So it has been like this yo-yo journey with intuitive eating. When people try and think that it was like this straight line up and it was nice and easy, intuitive eating isn't like that.
I'm so grateful that you've come on and that we've chatted and people have got to know you, because I love you, and they didn't get to see you shimmying, and there was a lot of boob action that people who are listening have missed out on completely. I have got a video recording. I might just do the boob highlights and stick it on YouTube, although I could get in trouble for that. but it's been an absolute pleasure. You have really changed my life, really. I feel like you are responsible for a huge change in me, and whenever anybody asks me about my journey, you know, you're in there. You are the person that set me on a very different path to the one that I was on previously. So thanks, my love. I mean, I say thanks, I'm gonna hang up and then we're gonna keep talking. It's not like you're going anywhere, but you'll have to come back.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed yourself today. If you want to get more involved with the Fat Doctor podcast, then why not check out my Patreon? I am at The Fat Doctor, and on there I offer a variety of different tiers depending on how much you can afford each month. You get the same access no matter which tier you're subscribed to, and one of the many benefits of joining my Patreon is you get a chance to listen to some extended podcast episodes. I've also got a Facebook group, Friends of the Fat Doctor, and there's my website, www.fatdoctor.com. For those of you who follow me on social media, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm even on TikTok, can you believe it? Join me next time for another episode tackling weight stigma and fat oppression.